The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, this is Stephen Hines, author of Zombie Fabulous, Rebirth Defect, and Valedictorian USA. And you, my friends, are listening to the PVD cast with John Orlando. Soak it up, suckers.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 274. I hope all is well with you, and I thank you for checking out this episode. This episode is going to feature a conversation with a gentleman by the name of Michael Spedden. Michael wears a lot of hats. For one, he's an actor. You may have seen him on the TV show Gotham, or you might have seen him most recently as a Viking on a J.G. Wentworth commercial that has been airing a lot in the middle of the afternoon. You know, the one with the bus with all the different folks on it and the catchy jingle, which now that I've said it, is stuck in your head, isn't it? It is, isn't it? Ah, man, I'm so sorry. I apologize. But anyways, he's had a lot of other acting gigs and we're going to talk about that. He's also a businessman, as he is the man behind the Foul Players of Perryville, which is an acting collective. He also is a podcaster. He has Foul Players Radio. In full transparency, I was on his show in October, and I had a blast. And so I was really looking forward to having Michael come on the PVD cast to talk about, you know, all of his experiences and whatnot. So it's going to be a great episode. But before we get to my conversation with Michael, I have a very special announcement to make. It's usually around this time in the podcast where I thank my great sponsor, World's Greatest Comics, and I do thank them for their support. But I need to let you know, especially people that are listening in Central Ohio, that World's Greatest Comics is having their big 10th anniversary sale this Saturday, March 6th, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. They got so many deals that I don't think I can name them all, but I'm going to try. 50-cent bargain comics. Deals on current issue of comics, 25% off graphic novels, 25% off action figures, statues, busts, all standard comic book supplies like bags, boards, boxes, 25% off, 10% off all Mylar, MyLite, and full backing boards. They got tons of stuff. So if you have any questions, you're in the Central Ohio area, you want to check out what they got, you can find them online, wgcomics.com. Or you can find them on Facebook at WG Comics. Heck, you could even give them a ring, 614-891-3000. If you're in the Central Ohio area, stop on over to the store. 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio is where the store is located. And, you know, I kind of said, you know, if you're in Central Ohio, but you know what? With the website and with the Facebook page, you can check this stuff out, man. Wherever you're at, if you're in Maryland, if you're in Mississippi, if you're in Michigan, it doesn't matter. It's the internet, yo. So you can check out the great deals. Contact the folks over at World's Greatest Comics. If you see something that you know you got to have, I'm sure they'll work something out with you. So once again, that's this Saturday, March 6th, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., World's Greatest Comics, huge 10th anniversary sale. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Michael Spedden. All right, ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening is a man that is a podcaster. He's an actor. He is also maybe I'm going to call him the master of murder mysteries. I don't know. That might be overblowing a little bit. I don't know. But yeah. Hey, Michael Spedden is joining me. Michael, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful, John. It's great to talk to you, buddy. It's been a while. It's been a good while. And I'm proud to be here on the PVD cast. You know, I think I had you on back before the first of the year, and we had a great time. And I've been looking forward to coming on and talking to you.
Yeah. And you know what? I agree. I had a blast on your podcast. Of course, it's the Foul Players Radio. We'll talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you could come back and join me here on the PVD cast. So it's a new year. How are things with you?
Well, I'm anticipating a lot of great things this year. We have something that kind of tells me there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know, we've been getting shots this year, and you know, they've been running a little slower than we thought, but you know, I am optimistic that we're going to be able to get back out there and make the Foul Players of Perryville happen again. We have a number of, I have 20 actors that are chomping at the bit, that we just want to get our shots, and we want to get the clearance from the CDC and, you know, whoever the decision makers are, that it's okay to get back out there again. And we have some new material that we're dying to get out and do, and we're just itching to perform. So I've been trying to reach out to, I've had a number of people reach out to me, some new venues, and I've been networking while the time has been, you know, while we've had downtime, reaching out to people on LinkedIn that are event planners, and are, and a number of new venues have opened up around me too. A lot of vineyards and breweries have been popular. You know, that seems to be sort of like the new kind of restaurant, like these brew pubs and vineyards where they make local wines and local beers. And you know, we had some very successful shows last year at those in my area, and there's a bunch of them popping up. So I'm going to hit those folks up to get on the roster. I'm going to go back to our older venues. I'm waiting for those to open up too. Those are a little trickier because they're indoors. You know, our big venue was the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad out in Cumberland. And that is a very, very nice gig. It's a lot of fun. The only problem is that that's a petri dish on wheels, with it being as enclosed as it is. And, you know, that's something we really have to watch. So we've got to wait for the go ahead on that one. And, but we're just looking forward to it. Unfortunately, over the weekend, and this was really sad news, I lost one of my actors suddenly. His name was Greg Crow, and he and I had actually been in Gotham, not together, but a season apart. He had a small part just like I did, and he was also recently in The Politician. He had a scene with Judith Light and Bette Midler, and he had a big part in a movie called Eighth Grade that I think is out on Amazon. And he was, you know, just a couple of years older than me, and unfortunately, it was just a sudden passing away. But he was just such a nice guy, and you know, my actors and I got together on Zoom, and we had a meeting just to kind of talk about things and, you know, remember him a bit. And we're going to dedicate our season once we get back to work to him this year. He was just such a wonderful guy, and we're definitely going to miss Greg.
Well, let's, since we're talking about it, let's go ahead. Let's talk about the foundation of your acting collective, if you will. How did it start?
Well, I got into acting, you know, I'd always been like a local and regional band guy since the 80s. You know, I played in hair bands and goth bands and all that stuff. And I have the pictures to prove it. And so that's going back to, I think I played my first show in high school, I think sometime in like 84. And since then, I've been performing in bands. And I'd say probably for the past 15, I've scaled it back and I've been doing like acoustic duo. We have an acoustic duo where we do original songs called the Uncle Moldy Show. Oh, I'd say in about 10 years ago, I was invited, because I could sing, I was invited to come out for Jesus Christ Superstar at Baltimore Actors Theater. After that, you know, I just started to get asked to do this and that and this and that. And around 2016, I was doing a play at a church. I was asked by my actual personal physician to come in and help out because they were doing a passion play for Easter. And during that production, I met a fellow by the name of Herb Otter. Herb ran Otter Productions, which was a murder mystery company, and he had had it for about 25 years, I think. And so he asked me to come out and perform, and I really enjoyed it. I really hit it off with everybody. My first show with them, I think, was either on the Pride of the Susquehanna in Harrisburg, or it may have been on the train in Western Maryland, the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad. Herb decided a couple of years ago that he wanted to do something else after 25, 27 years of doing it. And he sold the company to me, and I changed the name of the company to the Foul Players of Perryville. And I had actually kind of started my own thing on the side. I was working with a nonprofit organization that was supportive, something that was kind of a support thing for the arts. And we were doing murder mysteries to kind of make money for that. That kind of fell through, and I kept the name of the group, the Foul Players of Perryville, and I took over, you know, Otter Productions since then. And we had been performing on the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad, the Black Eyed Susan Riverboat, a number of vineyards and breweries around the area that I had mentioned before. And I not only had the folks that came that were already active in the group, I have brought a couple new people on board, and they've worked out very well. A number of people that I've performed in community theater and in improv classes and things with, and I just really have a great chemistry. I have to say I've been blessed with the people that have been with me and come on board since, you know, I've had this going. You know, we had a very successful run right before a pandemic of Polar Express. We had a cast of about 40 people. It was about 15 adults and about 25 kids. And we performed on the train 5 weekends in a row, about 10 shows a weekend. That was some work right there. And then pandemic hit. You know, we did a couple of shows last year, and then here comes the pandemic. But, you know, and in doing that too, I was still doing my professional acting gigs that I would get through my management, CPM Talent, out of Voorhees, New Jersey. I had in 2019, or actually starting in late 2018, I had Gotham. And in 2019, I got some Discovery ID work, and I got the J.G. Wentworth Viking, and I also got Kimmy versus the Reverend that year. 2020, not so much. You know, things were kind of shut down, and I only had one job last year, which was a small commercial that not many people saw. And so we're just looking forward. You know, we've been kind of back to the drawing board, writing new material, writing new shows, writing new gags and jokes and silliness to put in the shows, and just really waiting, you know, for the floodgates to open back up. I really think once things get going and people are feeling safe to go out, I really think we're going to have another renaissance in this country, another roaring 20s, because of all the people that have been, A, that are creative and have been cooped up, and B, haven't been able to see their friends in all this time. So I really think that people are going to be eager to get out and be entertained, and I think people are going to have all kinds of new material and content. So I think we have some good days ahead of us.
I'm going to ask a question about when you were talking about the Polar Express. You said that you had about 40 adults, and then you had, what, 25 kids?
15 adults and about 25 kids, yeah.
Well, how is the old adage in Hollywood true that you don't work with animals and kids because they'll show you up? Is that true in your experience or no?
Well, not with the kids. I've never worked with animals before, and my rule with animals is that nothing that can eat me, you know, nothing that's big enough to eat me, so no Tiger King stuff or anything like that. The kids... Well, you know, I have to say the kids were very, very well behaved. They were very well behaved. They had been, we held open auditions, and a lot of these kids had been in a theater program out in the Cumberland and Frostburg area, out way out in the panhandle of Maryland, close to West Virginia. And they were very well disciplined, very well behaved. I have to say, I think there was maybe just one small incident we had. But overall, I would hire them all back again.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, cool.
Yeah, their parents were involved. And the thing is, too, is that part of my ensemble of adults, we had some people that had not only been actors, but had worked as stage managers, a couple of drama teachers. And they knew, we all kind of teamed up and handled the kids okay. And I have to say, and then, you know, the other thing, too, was that, you know, my actors were excellent examples for these children too. You know, they taught them about work ethic and professionalism and behaving yourself and listening. And I have to say it rubbed off. Like I said, you know, very, very, you know, I would hire them all again.
Well, let's talk about Foul Players Radio. Okay. It is your own podcast. Mm-hmm. So why did you get started in podcasting?
I had been playing open mics and things, you know, with my acoustic duo starting around 2005. You know, in the Baltimore area, and I'm sure it's probably like this where you live too, that you have these, you probably have these legendary local bands you know, you may not know them outside of your state. Nobody had probably heard of them outside of your state, but you know, if you go into your state and you mention that band, you may as well be talking about the Rolling Stones. And there are a number of bands like that in the area here. You know, Kix, Crack the Sky, Face Dancer, Child's Play, Wrathchild, you know, the Ravens, even before we had the football team. You know, we had the band, there was a band here called the Ravens back in the 80s, back when we actually had the Colts here still. So those guys were like the Rolling Stones. And then when they do reunions, it's packed. You know, they do outdoor festivals and do reunions, and they still open for the national acts whenever there's a, you know, concert coming to town. And I was at some open mics, and a couple of these fellas were performing there. And, you know, they came in there performing acoustic. And, you know, through no fault of their own, you know, there was just a couple of young people there that said, well, I'm up after that old guy. I was like, wait a minute, you know who that is? Do you know who that is, who you're calling some old guy? You know, that guy was like I said, like Mick Jagger here 25, 30 years ago. You know who you're talking about, son. You know? So, I decided that, and I'd kicked the idea around for a number of years, and I had another podcast with a couple of other folks a few years back, but there was kind of an age difference between me and the other host. I was like 15 years older than those guys, and my idea of an intriguing guest and theirs was like night and day. And so, you know, I stopped doing that and I started my own because I really wanted to tell the history of entertainment and performing arts in the Mid-Atlantic region, you know, primarily focused around Baltimore and DC where I grew up. But I wanted to tell the stories of, you know, as we were growing up, you know, when we had three channels and then maybe some UHF and public TV, there were newscasters that everybody has known around here for that have been on the air. Some of them for over 50 years, the same with radio personalities, the same with the people in the news, the same with people that used to run the kids shows. You know, we had a fellow by the name of Captain Chesapeake who was on the air on a UHF channel before it was bought by Fox for over 20 years. You know, they started that station just like Weird Al Yankovic did in the UHF movie. And they came up with all their own programming. There was another fella on WDCA out of DC. People know him as Count Gore Duvall, and they also knew him as Captain 20. But, you know, he not only was he did all the programming on there, all the like the kids shows and things like that and different characters. He was also the like the Svengoolie, you know, every one of those stations had on Saturday night, like a well in Baltimore, Captain Chesapeake was also the ghost host. Captain 20 was Count Gore Duvall. And I wanted to preserve and pass those stories on to the next generation. You know, this is part of our history. I've had a number of the bands on from those days. I'm doing a whole series of interviews with a fellow by the name of Bud Becker. Bud Becker was the talent coordinator for, I think, the fourth biggest rock nightclub in rock history called Hammerjacks that was in Baltimore. And, you know, he was telling me stories about the bands that he booked there, you know, like the big local or regional bands that I was telling you about. But he also booked Sam Kinison and John Valby and Joe Piscopo. And he had Deep Purple in there. He booked Kiss there one time. And he's got just a billion stories of that club. And that club was a rite of passage back in the 80s and 90s. You know, it was just like going to, you know, the Troubadour or the Whiskey or CBGB's. It was, or the 930 Club in DC. It was an iconic nightclub. And he was telling me all these stories from inside there. He was also a tour coordinator for the Yardbirds. He knew Jimmy Page, Alice Cooper, Rod Stewart, Uriah Heep, Humble Pie, Black Sabbath, Seals and Croft. he was out on the road with all these bands coordinating the tour, you know, doing, you know, making sure all the shows went smoothly and making sure all the contracts were together. And I'm fascinated by these things. You know, I've had a couple of folks from Hollywood on the show. I've had them from New York. I've had people on Broadway, and I'm just fascinated with people's biographies or stories in the performing arts, how they got from point A to where they are now, you know, the ups and downs, the crazy things that happened to them, the good, the bad, you know, the tough times, the successful times, what made them successful. And that's what I enjoy telling people. And I enjoy hearing it from them, and I enjoy sharing it with people. So that's kind of why I started my podcast, you know, because there's so much history out there and so many great stories to hear that I wanted to kind of have it, you know.
That is a common, I guess you could say, theme that I've heard from many podcasters. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, either that there's stories that need to be told, or like me, I like entertaining people. And sure, I hope sure. that, you know, when they listen to an episode, if they get a couple of minutes of laughter, or mm-hmm. it makes their day just a little bit better, to me, that's why I'm doing it. And I, you know, I totally understand. So what do you think is maybe the biggest success you've had so far with Foul Players Radio?
With Foul Players Radio, I would have to say I've had my listenership. And again, you know, even the websites that host podcasts and things like that say take these numbers with a grain of salt. I have to say the biggest numbers I've got have been Bud Becker. There was another fellow who was like a local movie guy by the name of Steve Rivkin here in Maryland. I had an actress named Liz Priestley on who did very well, and she was just a wonderful lady. And I have to say, you know, I don't think I've had any guests that I regret. You know, nobody came on and was a jerk. Nobody came on and, you know, didn't want to be there. So I have to say, you know, all the shows I've really enjoyed doing, I haven't had an episode where I'm just like, oh God, can we get this over with? Or this person's a jerk. No, they've all been wonderful to me, and I've enjoyed them all. But, you know, as far as numbers and things like that, and again, we take these with a grain of salt, you know, those have been like the three biggest ones. And then I've had another one who got a lot of numbers was an author who also likes telling people's stories, because he has done biographies on Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi. He's an expert on old Hollywood, especially the Universal horror movies. He's gone all over the world to do his research and write these books. Another one I really enjoyed was a fellow who's writing a book about Shemp Howard. His name is Jeff Dale. And that was another one I thought was successful. And then some horror movie actresses I've had on, you know, Lisa London, Suze Lanier Bramlett. I've had Deborah Lamb. I've had Laura Meadows. You know, I've had, you know, a couple of other authors on, and I have to say they're all successful in their own way, but, you know, and again, I've had some that have been like bigger numbers than others, but again, you know, they've all been a delight.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you brought up numbers, because I think that is, to me, one of the things that I think people that don't do podcasting, how many listeners do you have?
Right. Right.
And I think that at times the data is sometimes not reflective of the actual truth. And that's, I don't know if that's, I don't want to make it sound like it's a conspiracy theory or whatnot. It just, that's the way it is, I think.
Right, you know right.
I
mean?
I think it's really hard to find out that, you know, I have X amount of listeners here on this, you know, on this episode versus the same episode or a similar episode, you know, a few months ago. In fact, I'll even share that there was, a point, and I want to say it was at the end of 2018, where my numbers in September just bottomed out through the floor. And I was like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. And I was really kind of like, what am I doing wrong? And then I started talking to some of the other podcasters here in Columbus. They're like, yeah, same with us. Mm-hmm. What? Yeah, same with us. We don't know why. They just plummeted. I don't know if it was, you know, nice weather at that time and people decided to go on vacation, or if there was glitches with the, you know, Libsyn service or what, but they were like, yeah, same thing. We completely bottomed out. And I'm like, thank God, because I was really having some doubts, you know? So I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, the numbers, listeners out there, numbers sometimes are a little bit, how do I want to say it? They're not sketchy, but or sometimes maybe they're a mystery. Let's go that way. Is that, would that be accurate, Michael, to say?
I think they are. And I kind of think that's what the host sites are telling us when you look at the explanation for it, because, you know, they're tracking this all over the world and you never know who is forwarding things, forwarding links to other people. If people are doing that, there's a number of factors that kind of come into play, you know? So I really, you know, I would, you know, like to think, cause the thing is that I do get, you know, a lot of compliments and a lot of like messages and likes on Facebook. And, you know, when I run into people, they say they listen all the time. So again, I don't think I'm the next Larry King or Jay Leno or anything like that, but I'm getting good feedback on people and so from people that listen. So I'm going to stick with it.
There you go. Well, let's talk about your time on Gotham, because I'm going to be honest. I was a individual that watched every single episode of Gotham.
Oh, great. Great.
I must confess, though, I don't remember your character on there. Please don't take offense to that, Michael.
That's fine. That's fine.
I can't remember. I can't place that. I'd have to go back and rewatch. But how was that? How was it to be on the set with, you know, such talented people, you know, as, you know, Ben McKenzie and Robin Lord Taylor and Corey Michael Smith and those folks?
Surreal. I felt like I jumped into my TV set. I just felt like I, you know, one of those things where you've seen these stories on TV where somebody's standing there and they just kind of like go right through their TV screen and they're there. That was a wonderful experience, I have to say. I auditioned for Gotham, oh, I think it was around Halloween of 18. And the thing is, Andrew Selling can tell the story better than I can. I've had him on my show as well. He was Mr. Penn. And Mr. Penn ended up being the ventriloquist and he shot me. So that it was season 5, episode 8, but he was telling me that last season 5, and he elaborated on it in the episode and he's been on other interviews too. He told me that season 5, I believe, was not supposed to happen, but then it was promised to be a full season, but then it was brought back to only 11 episodes. So there was a big complicated story with that. And I think there were just some decisions made at the network. And he ended up telling me about, you know, how he ended up getting to be the ventriloquist too, which was very interesting. So I auditioned for this and I went up to New York City. I auditioned for 2 parts on that episode. One was Dale, which was the part that I got. And I come in with, I was one of Oswald Cobblepot's henchmen. And I'll tell you a little more about that in a minute. The other part that I auditioned for, in that episode, Bruce Wayne and Alfred go through these tunnels that are under the city. And there's some sort of a mutant humanoid down there that's, you know, mauling people and ripping people to shreds. And I also auditioned for that part. It turned out that I was better off as Dale because you actually got to see me. The humanoid, you got to see him, but it was like a blur because it was a fight scene and there was a lot of growling and spinning and, you know, arms and legs flying all over the place. So you really didn't get a chance to see that person very much. And honestly, I think they were looking for somebody built a little bit different than me. I'm sort of a dad bod guy. And a lot of the people that I saw, I'm 6'6". I'm a big guy, but I'm a dad bod as compared to, there were a number of other people that I saw at the audition that were waiting to go in that were, you know, they looked like they belonged in the NFL or something. You know, big guys that were more muscular and in shape and, you know, a lot younger. So I auditioned for the part and the audition consisted of making snarling noises and loud and growls like the Tasmanian devil, and for Dale making dumb faces and reacting to the dialogue. Well, I knocked the making dumb faces right out of the park and I got notified that I got the part a couple days later. So I went up for my wardrobe fitting and I got to meet everybody at Steiner, and it was very nice. Steiner Studios is in Brooklyn, New York. Not too far, I'd say probably about a mile or so from the Brooklyn Bridge. There was an old Navy base up in Brooklyn, from what I understand. And it was no longer a Navy yard. It was now Steiner. And Steiner Studios is the biggest studio on the East Coast. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. So, you know, I went for my, did my wardrobe, and then I came back up a few days later to shoot. So I got up there and I got myself a hotel, and it was about a mile from the studios. And I was like, I'm getting up here early. I'm bringing like five alarms with me because I am not going to be late for this, because they wanted me on set at 6 o'clock sharp the next morning. So I came up, and the hotel was kind of in a neighborhood that looked like the opening credits to Welcome Back, Kotter, you know, with the elevated subway train and the markets and, you know, like the street markets and everything. So I stayed there and it was nice. And I ended up, you know, the next morning, what I would do is I would lay down to go to bed. And then I would like jump up every 2 hours. Like, oh my God, am I late? Am I late? Did I miss my alarm? Then I'm like, oh no. You know, it's still the middle of the night. You're fine. Okay. And I'd lay back down. Then I'd jump up again. And finally, I'd say probably like right before 4 o'clock, I was like, you know what? I'm up. I'm going to get showered. I'm going to get down there. So I got there early and I got to relax in my car for a little bit. They let me into the parking lot. And then I started to see lights go on in the building. And I went up and I was greeted by, you know, some young PAs, and they really took care of us. That was a SAG job. And I tell you what, they really rolled out the red carpet for us, you know. So I got there and I'm just kind of getting dressed and waiting to get my hair and makeup and all that stuff done. And then while I was in my room, I hear a little knock and I turn around. And I'm like, holy cow, it's Mr. Penn. It was Andrew Sellen. I tell you, he is just a hell of a nice guy. He greeted me and he told me, welcome to the family. And even though I was only there for a small part in filming for 2 days, you know, I got to say, they really just treated me as if I'd been on the set, you know, the whole time. So I spoke with him for a little bit, and then, you know, we were going to have to go down to rehearsal in a while to rehearse the scene. And so I went in and got my hair and makeup done. And I tell you what, they put enough hairspray on me. It was almost like Gorilla Glue Girl. they put enough hairspray and stuff on my hair. You could have broken a baseball bat over my head and I wouldn't have felt a thing with all everything they had in my hair. And so, you know, we went down and we rehearsed for a bit, and I got to meet Robin Lord Taylor and Michael Corey Smith. And those were the fellows I shot with. I saw Gordon. I saw him.
Oh, Donald Loge.
Yes. I saw him in the building, but we didn't work together. And I also saw Marina Baccarin. Mm-hmm. She played the doctor, the dark-haired lady. Yeah.
Yes.
I saw her getting on and off of an elevator once, but I didn't really get a chance to meet her. So, but I did see her there. And so, you know, we filmed, and it was just really a great experience. You know, we would film. And then, you know, there was downtime and I got a chance to get to know Robin Lord Taylor a bit. He's just a very, you know, nice, friendly, neighborly person. And I got to meet Corey Michael Smith too. And I got pictures with him and stuff. They were just really nice. And I was just asking them about their experiences on Gotham, what the show has been like and that kind of thing. And they were asking about me, where I was from and, you know, the things that I've done in the past. And, you know, I was telling them about the murder mystery and everything. So it was really nice to meet them. I have to say, you know, for my network television debut, I couldn't have picked three nicer people to make it with. You know, when I made my entrance, the scene that we were doing took place in Ed Nigma's like laboratory. It was like this big library where he was working on the submarine they were going to use to escape from Gotham. Okay.
Right.
So I came in and we were waiting in the hall and we were doing rehearsal. And the thing that I thought was interesting was that they had real food on the tray. Like usually it would be plastic food or fake food, but it was actually real. And I'm 6'6". Robin Lord Taylor is about 5'7", I think. He's like a foot shorter than I am. His line about me was, you know, Dale, he's big, mute, and dumb as a post. And so they made me look kind of doofy. You know, they gave me ill-fitting clothing where it was like Winnie the Pooh. I was wearing a shirt, but with a cardigan or like a sweater vest over top of it that only came halfway down my belly, and I had high waters on and the sleeves were short. And So I'm standing there and I'm holding this tray of food, and I'm right behind Robin Lord Taylor, and the food was grapes. It was some sort of a really smelly cheese. It wasn't Limburger, but it was something else. And then there was like some open tins of sardines and I think anchovies on the tray. So I'm walking, and I don't know why they went through that effort, because they never zoomed in on the tray or anything like that, but they just had it there. So I'm holding it, and I was like holding it like kind of high up, like about chest high for me. So Robin was in front of me, and he turned around to say something to somebody, and he ended up being like nose level with the tray, and he smelled the sardines and everything. And he looks at me, he's like, "Geez, man, that's awful." And I started laughing. I said, "Yeah." And he looks at me and he goes, "Do you ever eat that stuff?" And I said, "Well, yeah, you know, I'll be honest. You know, I go to the store and I'll eat sardines once or twice a year, and I'll get anchovies on my pizza maybe every 3 to 5, you know, I indulge once in a while." And he started laughing. I said, "You know, it's definitely not date food, you know." So, you know, so we were kind of laughing about that. And again, you know, they were just really nice. You know, Corey was telling me about a movie that he was working on. I think it was called 1985, that I believe was just either, I think it was finished, and I believe it was about ready to debut on either Netflix or Amazon or something. And so he was talking about that. He was very proud of that movie. And then I spent the most time, Corey and Robin were really good friends, and those guys were a couple of cut-ups. You know, they were always cutting up and laughing and, you know, joking amongst themselves backstage or offset. And then Andrew and I talked, you know, quite a bit. And yeah, he's very, very smart. He went to Harvard, and he's like highly, highly intelligent, like real well educated and everything. And we were talking, because we've both done Shakespeare, and we were talking a little bit about that and some theater gigs we've had over the years. And you know, and then I met a couple of people that were actually from Baltimore that were, you know, hair and makeup and technicians and things like that. And I got to talk to them a little bit too. And so it was just an absolutely wonderful experience. As a matter of fact, the director, Ken Fink, directed a number of Homicide episodes, and Homicide was filmed in my hometown of Baltimore too.
Mm-hmm. You know, funny, man, you're doing this kind of little 6 degrees of separation. Corey Michael Smith, a Columbus native, went to college right up the street from my home at University. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I did read he was from Ohio. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. No kidding. Yeah. It is a small world, isn't it?
It is. And it's funny you mentioned Homicide: Life on the Street. That's a favorite show of mine. And I feel not a lot of people know about it. I feel like that, and that's a crime, because it was such a solid show.
Yes. Yes.
The last season was a little, but it is neither here nor there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was a big fan of Homicide: Life on the Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was back in the good old days when they would film a lot in Maryland. You know, there was Homicide, of course. You know, The Corner and The Wire. Mm-hmm. The Veep was filmed quite a bit, like in D.C. and in different spots of Maryland. House of Cards was filmed in a lot of it was in DC, but in Maryland too. And then of course, you know, we've got, you know, John Waters, mm-hmm. who did most of his films here. We've had Barry Levinson, who films a lot of his movies were filmed here too. So, you know, there was, you know, quite a good number of years where a lot of things were being filmed here. And there still are, you know, like a lot of indie projects and a lot of, you know, smaller companies that film here. A lot of ID Discovery was done here. The company, their headquarters was in Bethesda or Silver. It was either Bethesda or Silver Spring. I think it was Silver Spring, and that's more of like a DC suburb. It's in Maryland, mm-hmm. but it's right outside of DC. So a lot of things were, you know, being filmed there as well, by, you know, ID Discovery and the Discovery Channel.
Yeah. Isn't Walter Reed Hospital in Silver Spring?
I believe it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Walter Reed. And there's Bethesda Naval Hospital, which is in Bethesda, of course. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Michael for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They're a proud sponsor of the PVD cast. And this weekend, they are having their big 10th anniversary sale. It's all going down Saturday, March 6th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. They've got so many deals, I don't think I can name them all. Here's just a few, though. They're going to have 50-cent bargain comics. They're going to have deals on current issue comics. 25% off graphic novels. 25% off busts, statues, and action figures. Mylar, Mylite, full backing boards, 10% off. Standard comic book supplies, 25% off. You don't want to miss this sale. So jump on their website, wgcomics.com, or find them on Facebook. Just search for at WG Comics. And if you're in the area, stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And you can even give them a ring at area code 614-891-3000. Find out about all the great things happening this weekend at the big 10th anniversary sale of World's Greatest Comics.
Well, speaking of government buildings and that, I read where you worked as a safety worker to help the cleanup of the Pentagon after 9/11.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. That's my day job. I work in occupational safety and health. And
okay.
Yeah, I started my regular working career back in the 80s as a cable TV technician. And as I moved up in the company, I worked for a couple of cable companies and I ended up being a safety manager. And I taught things like pole climbing, ladder safety, you know, working on the road, flagging, that kind of thing. And I got into construction safety, you know, working with construction companies, you know, making sure people aren't killing themselves out there, helping the company be compliant with OSHA or any state regulations that you need. And I ended up, I was taking classes. I was actually working on another degree at the time in occupational safety and health. And one of my instructors, and I just, this was right after 9/11, and right around 9/11 was when the dot-com bubble burst. And I was working for a communications company, which was kind of a dot-com company. And a lot of us ended up getting pink slips right after 9/11 happened. So I, you know, went to class and I knew it was imminent. So I just asked my instructor and he says, look, I'm looking for somebody to work the Pentagon with me. I said, sure. So basically what we had to do was walk around on the site and I got to walk right where the plane went in. And where
how was that? Because to me, surreal. That has to be like just a mind scramble, you know.
It was like being in the Twilight Zone. You know how in the Twilight Zone, like in the one thing like Time Enough at Last,
mm-hmm.
when Burgess Meredith was in the bank vault and I guess the nuke went off and he comes out and everything was just everywhere. That's kind of what it was like. You could see where the plane went in and I started down there maybe about 2 weeks after the whole thing happened. So all that stuff was gone and the scale of the damage down there was nowhere near the World Trade Center. And I knew people that worked at the World Trade Center too, just, you know, sifting through the rubble and, you know, down there rebuilding and everything. But I'll tell you more about the Pentagon actually. So I was there and, you know, you're walking up and down the hall and the inside of the hallways were just black because of the jet fuel burning. And every door, every office door had an X on it. In the X's, there would be in one quadrant, like usually on the left, it would say the date and the time. The top quadrant would say like BATF or FBI or whoever went into the room. And then at the bottom number would be the number of dead bodies they took out. You know, I was looking in these rooms and looking in these offices and all the clocks had stopped at the time the plane hit. And I was looking and people's offices were there, all the hard drives and all the computers were taken. You know, intelligence went in and grabbed all that stuff first. But you would still see, you know, an office, you know, right near where that happened. And you would see like a child's, you know, a parent, you know, was in that office and their child's picture was smashed on the floor. Coffee cups still spilled over from when that happened. You know, it was just like, again, it reminded me of the Twilight Zone. It was just very, very surreal. And I was working, geez, see, that was a hell of a commute for me too, because I lived on the east side of Baltimore City. And even in the middle of the night, you know, because DC traffic never, ever stops. It's constantly a traffic jam down there. And for me to get to work at 6, I'd have to leave at 3:30 every morning. And it's only like a 35-mile drive, you know, so I would get up and get down there early. But a lot of times I would just stay overnight. I would sleep in a construction trailer on a desk or something. And I was down there, I think, like, oh, geez, there's 168 hours in a week. I was down there, I think, for, I was working 100-hour weeks down there. And what we were doing was just, you know, walking around and making sure that people weren't getting injured, following the best work practices. But they had to gut that part of the building, and the building was built in the 1940s. I think it was built right before World War II. So that was back when, hey, let's put asbestos in the building. That's a good idea. Yeah. You know, so there was a lot of that. They had to strip out all the electric and all the, you know, plumbing, all the, you know, fire sprinklers, and basically just gut it down to the shell of a building, remove all the asbestos and all that. And then they would do that before they would knock it down. And so I ended up being there for the phase of the job I was on. Oh, I would say probably late September of 01 until right after Christmas. And then it basically the phase of the job was done. And I went on to do a couple of other consulting jobs, and I ended up getting like a permanent job a few months later. But, and I ended up at the job I'm in 03. So Yeah, I jumped around a little bit, but I've always had steady employment. That was the best bit of showbiz advice I ever got, was don't quit your J job. And that's something that's served me quite well. It was a wonderful, and I got to work with a lot of people that were down there doing air sampling, and I learned a lot on that job too.
Well, I guess I have to ask this question. How many times in a week do you find yourself singing the J.G. Wentworth jingle?
well, the thing is that I have a collar. I have a special collar I wear around my neck, and whenever I start, it zaps me. So, I'll tell you about that job if you like.
Yeah, let's talk about it, because you know I will see it every once in a while, usually on the regular, not the cable channels, but the regular channels up here in Columbus. They like to play it. And gosh darn it, if you just don't sing that damn song after you hear it once, you sing it for a couple of, at least an hour or so after you hear it.
It's an earworm, isn't it? It's really an earworm. I got that job right after Gotham. I think I went up and auditioned for that. Oh, we filmed Gotham right after Thanksgiving of 18, and I think I auditioned for this. It was like right after Christmas. And we filmed it. I think the date that we filmed it was actually January 9th of 2019. And I had to go to Stamford, Connecticut for that. I drove up there and I had a hotel I stayed in overnight. The audition was like group auditions. And what they would do was it was all lip syncing. And the thing is, it was funny was if you remember like watching, have you ever seen the first Producers that Mel Brooks did?
No, I'm familiar with it, but I've never seen it.
Okay. Well, in other words, so when you, when I went up to the audition room, you know, when I got there, there was like all these guys wearing Viking helmets and stuff. So, I was like, okay, so, all right. You know, so I auditioned and they would take like maybe 10 of us at a time, because there was all kinds of people on the bus. You know, there was just, you know, there was a construction worker, there was the driver, and then there was like some younger people and some older people. And so they had like a mix of people that when we were auditioning, and what we would do is they would play the song, and then they would have cue cards, and the cue cards would have, I think when the letters were written in blue, that's when the group sang or the group lip synced. But then they would point to people and you would look at the cue card and lip sync the cue card. You know, they pointed to me. They pointed to a fellow who was going to be the construction worker. They pointed to a couple of the ladies that were there, and they made their choice. And I got the call, I think 2 days later. So we went and filmed it in Stamford, and that was a nice, I tell you what, everybody on that bus was just so nice. And there were a number of people I've had as guests on the show too. The construction worker's name is Mike Funk. I've had him on as a guest. He's done a number of TV shows. He's done some Law and Order SVU, and he's got a nice IMDb page, a number of movies. Lothair Eaton, he was the gentleman in the back of the bus, and he has like a long list of credits for theater, touring theater groups. God, what was the name of that show that he's most named, that he's most known for? It'll Starlight Express. Express. He did that in a number of countries over the years. There was a lady named Natalie Vero who had done some work in a YouTube series called Peas in a Pod, which is really funny. And I've had those folks on too. So the people were just very, very, very nice. Now, remember how tall I am. Okay. I told you I was 6'6". Okay. So I went back to my car. We met at like at a little cafe. It was one of the new trendy cafes where they have all the new kinds of sandwiches and, you know, these neat breakfasts and all these like new, and I think they had a couple of food trucks affiliated with it. So we met there and we're getting to know everybody. And I had to go back to my car to get something. And I saw some people on the bus. I was walking by the bus that they had. And so I was like, so I kind of overheard them saying, "Did you see how tall he was? How's this going to work?" And I was like, "Oh no, I hope they're not going to fire me because I'm too tall." But the thing was, is if I stand straight up and down at 6'6", I am as tall as a bus on the inside. Okay. Now, if you add the horns, which were another 8 inches, and plus they had like lighting and some other things, you know, up in the ceiling of the bus, you know, attached like from where the those bars you hold on to are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had to, you know, if you look at the beginning of the commercial, when the fellow comes on at the beginning and then they show the back of the bus, I'm standing down in the, on those steps that lead to the back door. Okay. And I was sort of semi hidden. And then when I came in, I had to kind of like step like backwards into the side, and I had to stay kind of crouched down to get around the girl that was up front, the lady that was up front, to kind of get around her and to come into shot smoothly. Now on a moving bus, that was not easy. we had to do a number of, you know, takes and everything. And I tell you what, I had, that was a buns of steel workout after that. Cause we, you know, we filmed that a number of times, but we drove around Stamford, Connecticut all day with that song playing, and then each person did their parts. Then they moved the cameras from the front of the bus to the back of the bus. But the fellow that's in the commercials, the driver, wasn't there. We had a regular guy, I guess like a charter bus guy driving it. And then afterwards, you know, they, you know, we got dinner, and they were absolutely just a delightful group of people to work with. I have to say again, another blessing, you know. Now a couple of people were asking if the people on the bus were actually like rowing oars, and we had like a dragon head on the front of the bus. And I have to say that we didn't go that far. we didn't go that far, and nobody died, and we didn't light the bus on fire and shove it out into a lake or anything. So, you know, I think they returned the bus to the bus rental place or whatever at the end. So that was just another wonderful experience with wonderful people.
Cool. Well, you know what? We're getting up to almost an hour here. So, Michael, let's talk real quickly. Do you have any upcoming projects, any upcoming podcast episodes, any roles that you want to tell us about?
I did a small commercial, which isn't even airing anymore, back in the fall. That was kind of, again, I worked with some very nice people, but that's not something anybody, I think, is going to see. I've got some, you know, podcast episodes coming up. I've got another episode with Bud Becker with his rock and roll stories coming up. I've got another podcast that I've met called Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker. Those guys are going to be coming up soon. And let me see. I just had Carla Malden on, who's the daughter of Carl Malden, and she's an author. I had her on talking about her book, and I had Ted Lang on Monday. He was a really nice guy too.
He's the best, by the way. I hate to interrupt, but Ted Lang is awesome.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And so you can hear those at www.foulplayersradio.com. We don't have any shows scheduled as of yet for the Foul Players of Perryville, Well, if you go to the foulplayersofperryville.com, that's where you can find out information about the murder mystery group. If you would like to see me, basically turn on your television, and it's normally shows that involve judges. A lot of people say they see the J.G. Wentworth commercial on, like, Judge Judy and Judge Joe, this guy or whatever. Normally on during daytime TV is what I've heard. So you'll probably catch that then. Gotham is season 5, episode 8, available on both Netflix and Amazon. Kimmy versus the Reverend. I have a part in that with Ellie Kemper and Titus Burgess. I played the bartender. And that is also available on Netflix, Kimmy versus the Reverend. Other than that, Michael Spedden on Facebook, Michael Spedden on Twitter. But I don't think anybody ever reads my tweets because nobody yells at me or anything. Not that I put up anything to get yelled at over. And I also have, you know, the Foul Players of Foul Players Radio is on Twitter. And I'm on Instagram with, you know, the Foul Players of Perryville, Foul Players Radio, Michael Spedden too. So hopefully you'll find me somewhere and like what you see. And that's about it.
Well, Michael, it's been really fun. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your evening to sit down and chat with me. It's been a blast.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it. And like I said, I enjoyed having you on my show, and I'm always glad to come on. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem. We'll maybe get together maybe towards the end of the year and see how things were for the season, and see if you got any other cool acting gigs. How about that?
Well, let's hope. Let's hope. You know, things are starting to open back up. So I know I'm getting back into acting lessons. You know, my manager's on me, and like, you got to spend some time blowing the rust off of yourself and getting ready to get back out there. And you know, again, I'm getting a lot of inquiries, but not set dates from places to go perform. So I'm going to be shifting gears a little bit and kind of going towards that. But Foul Players Radio is not going to go anywhere. It's not going to leave. It's just maybe a little less, maybe not so much Mike, you know, that's you'll see me in other areas.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Keep your eyes open. Michael Spedden's going to be all over the place. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Michael Spedden, talking about acting and 9/11 and podcasting and all kinds of things. So I hope that you enjoyed this episode. And there's a couple different ways where you can let me know whether you liked it or you didn't like it. Feel free to shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. Or you can leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram feeds. Just look for @PVDcast. And if you want to let some folks know about this podcast, there's a couple different ways that they can get it. Obviously, PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, is the easiest way to find it. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting platforms. Just go to the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it. Why? I don't know. That's just how it works sometimes. But anyways, if you do that, you're sure to find the PVD cast. And if you listen to any episode, please rate and review. That helps me out in the algorithm. And subscribe so you never miss another episode. I also do 2 live broadcasts of the PVD cast each and every week. Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page of the PVD cast @PVDcast. You can listen to this week's episode, and then it's replayed through the Facebook page of the Scene Snobs on Tuesday nights, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And while you're over at the Scene Snobs Facebook page, check out some of the other great podcasts that are on that network. And I appreciate the fact that I'm on that network. I really do. Hey, don't forget as well one final time that this weekend, March 6th, is the big 10th anniversary sale for World's Greatest Comics. They got so many deals. I've run it down twice, but I'm just going to throw it out there one more time because it's an anniversary sale, man, and the deals are red hot. So check them out online, wgcomics.com, or on Facebook @WGComics. Stop on over the store if you can. 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio is where they're located. And you know what?
It's a great store. It's great people over there at that store. You know, I really appreciate their support and their patronage over the years. So, all right. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to get on out of here. I thank you once more for checking out this episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.